Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to take up spring paddling, getting ready for it with Darren Bush of Rutabaga of Madison. We just heard a little mention of Rutabaga, and that was not really planned.
Yes, no, please.
Rutabaga has been a great supporter of Wisconsin Public Radio for a long time.
But 8 years.
8 years. Yep. So it's wonderful to have those mentioned. And that was just purely chance that happened then.
Please.
But it was good to hear it anyway. Sure. And thank you so much for being with us today. And by the way, we have a couple listeners out there. You know,
a few.
we got a few out there, and I want to address them for a second and just say, if you have a question about paddling, what are your summer plans or spring plans for paddling? Where and when do you plan to go if you like to paddle but haven't? What's stopping you? Those are some things we can take up as we visit with Darren Bush today of Rutabaga of Madison, the probably largest sports paddle shop anywhere in the world. Call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can even post something on our Facebook page, too, at The Larry Mueller Show, if you'd like to do that. And Darren, welcome back.
Thank you.
What are you most looking forward to this season?
Well, I've got 3 solo trips booked on the calendar for myself, 4 days. Mm-hmm. I do it every year. My wife is incredibly supportive. She basically says, before we do anything else, let's get those on the calendar so they're there. And that's that sacred time. I don't take other appointments then. I'm also taking my family to Hawaii in June. It's my daughter's college graduation and my son's high school graduation present. And we're going to paddle the Nepali coast in Kauai.
Oh!
Yeah. Waterfalls, wow. Fantasy Island without the little short guy.
Yeah. Oh, man, that sounds wonderful. When does that happen?
Mid-June. Yeah.
Okay. Did you have an extra ticket for moi?
Oh, yeah. frequent flyer miles, Larry.
Frequent flyer miles.
I'll carry you on.
Oh, gosh. Well, let's talk about that. This time of year, I know we had something on the Facebook page about that. And this time of the year, there is always some issues relating to cold water, cold weather. And we had a post relating to the show today, and the post was from David, who noticed a kayak on the Chippewa River yesterday afternoon, I think it was. And the water temperature's got to be cold, wondering what type of waterproof clothing is the best for early spring kayaking, or probably canoeing for that matter, wouldn't make a difference.
What I would say is the best clothing is the stuff you'll actually put on. And the problem is people, it's 80 degrees, the water's 45 degrees, I'm not going to dump. And 40 degrees, 45 degrees feels pretty chilly when it's that warm out. There's basically 2 ways to go. We call it wet protection and dry protection. Wet protection, everybody knows about. It's the wetsuit. You put it on, you get a thin layer of water between the neoprene and your skin. It warms up, and it feels pretty good. Dry protection is more like a dry suit, which keeps you dry, and you wear insulation underneath it, so it's got seals at the feet and the wrists and the neck. And those are a little more expensive than a wetsuit, but they're super comfortable, and you can peel them off and walk into the the store across the street,
right?
And not have to peel yourself out of a stinky wetsuit.
And that water when it's cold, I mean, it is hard. I remember talking to someone from the DNR, a safety specialist, Barb Wolf, as a matter of fact, was on the show. She talked about a drowning victim that they found who had fallen out of his boat, and he still had his hat on. I mean, the shock was to the point he couldn't even thrash enough to lose his hat.
Yeah, there's a thing called mammalian dive reflex. When your face hits the water, it can shut down your breathing, and if you'll pass out. It doesn't happen all the time, but this time of year is tough because the water is cold and the water is often swift on the rivers, and it's you got to be careful. I mean, I went out the day after Canicopia, it was like 50.
The water.
Well, I wasn't in the water, and that's the point. You dress for immersion and then hope that doesn't happen.
Brian or Ken in Birchwood has a question or comment for you. Let's go to Ken. Hi, Ken.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Hey, Darren, I've been a paddler, kayak, and canoe for almost all my life. And something that I am really anxious to try is a new phenomena called paddle boarding. You were talking about Hawaii and yep. where you're on the board, surfboard, basically, with a big, long paddle. In Birchwood, perfect lake for paddle boarding, and I'm really anxious to try it. I was wondering if Rutabaga was involved or even thinking about involvement in paddle boarding. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks. We actually are. We got in it pretty early on, just sticking our toe in the water, but now we're in all the way. We've got classes. We've got, you know, the equipment. It's really cool. It started off on the coast in Hawaii. Basically, you can catch bigger waves if you're moving faster, and you can move faster using a paddle than you can using your hands. So it turned into a start with a surfing thing. And we'll be doing some of that while we're in Hawaii as well. One of the nice things about it is you can look down and see more in the water because you don't have the glare because you're higher up. And it's just fun. It's also a really good core exercise. It's kind of like yoga on a board. So you really get strong. And it's low impact. And, you know, you get wet and it's fun. It's a good time.
Wear a life jacket.
Always, yeah. It's interesting you say that because for a long time people didn't wear a life jacket saying, hey, it's a surfboard. What the Coast Guard says is if you're not in a surf zone, it's considered a vessel and you wear a life jacket. So in the surf zone, you don't have to. A lot of people wear an inflatable one just because it's very unobtrusive. And those work great. But, yeah, definitely want to wear a life jacket.
There you go, Ken. Thanks for calling. James in Fountain City, we turn to you next. Hi, James.
Hi there. Say, just wanted to give a heads up for people that want a spring trip here. The weather's kind of cool right now, but the Mississippi River, of course, is in flood stage, and a person can go out on the river and canoe in the backwaters just about any place they want to go. And by cruising through the trees, it's just about like going into the bayous of Louisiana here. My wife and I were out last weekend, and it was just fantastic. So and it doesn't last long, of course. Once the river drops, then it's bye-bye. But
Yeah,
high water is not a bad thing sometimes. Current, not so good. But a couple friends of mine from Winona and Current Designs, they're in Winona just up the river from you, and they were out surfing on the waves that were created by the flood. I don't recommend that for most people.
No.
But getting into the backwaters, you can go places you normally couldn't go. It's a really good point.
Thanks, James. That's a good tip. John in Superior, we're going to you next. Hi, John.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I would just like your guest to discuss the proper way to determine paddle length for a canoe bow and stern with the bentwood paddles. The bentwood as opposed to the straight paddles. And sure. I can just take my answer off the air.
Sure. That's actually a pretty simple way to do it. Now, back up just a little bit. Most people measure their paddle length by their height, but that really isn't relevant when you're sitting down, right? Because all it is about your torso. Now, my wife and I, she's 5'7", and I'm 6'1". Our torsos are almost identical, so we use the same length paddle. The way you select the bent shaft paddle is to sit down on a hard chair, put the grip between your legs, and look straight ahead. You should see plus or minus where the paddle blade flares off from the shaft, really close to that. You may go up or down an inch depending on the kind of boat you're in. If you're in a deeper boat, mm-hmm. you might want a longer paddle. But when in doubt, paddle with a 50 or a 52. It fits 95% of the people.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in as well at 1-800-642-1234. Email talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Steve in Mazamani next. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, thank you. I wonder, related to the last question, I wonder if you could explain the purpose of the bent wood paddles where the blade is maybe at 15 degrees from the shaft and if they're worth the extra expense for most people. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you.
Yeah, great question. So I'm not sure how I can do this without visually do this. I mean, auditorially, it's difficult. When you think about it, when you paddle with a paddle stroke, you're basically putting the blade in the water and pulling, right? Pulling you past the point in the water. So the blade doesn't move very much. You do. The blade kind of sticks because water is pretty dense. With the bend in the paddle, and good estimates, usually between 11 and 14 degrees, it gives you a more perpendicular paddle face to the water. So there's less slippage. It's also a little bit shorter, so you get a little bit higher cadence. And that's the upsides. So if we're putting on miles, that's what racers, they started with racers. And, so if we're putting on miles in the boundary waters, a bent shaft's great. You do lose a little bit of control, sort of, kind of. You know, when you do a correction stroke, you have to compensate for the bend a little bit. But it's a religious discussion. You know, I paddle with both, and it depends on the situation I'm in.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And we have an email from Marty. My wife and I are interested in getting a kayak for the lakes around here, I'm assuming Madison. What does your guest, what do you think about an open-top kayak versus the closed ones? We'd like to get a double.
Okay. Two different questions. Number one is open versus closed. Closed boats, they're not really closed, right? They're just, they have a cockpit on them, and they can be quite large. The difference is the water doesn't come up through the bottom of them. It also doesn't drain out from the top. So the sit-on-top kayaks tend to be a little bit more stable, a little more user-friendly, because water can drain. If you flip them over, you can crawl back on. That said, you get wet. Yeah. So you have to decide, is it worth getting wet? You can usually paddle longer late in the season or earlier in the season with a boat that is just a regular sit-inside type boat. That said, it just depends on your situation. The sit-on-top boats tend to be a little more sluggish. They're not quite as efficient. But if you're just paddling around recreationally, it doesn't really matter very much. As far as the tandem, I usually recommend people start in solo kayaks and then move to a tandem if they need to. It's kind of like a bicycle. Few people get a tandem bike to start learning how to bike. Right.
Right.
It's kind of a specialized thing for later. I'd say that 98% of the boats we sell are singles. It's also a more intimate experience because you can paddle next to somebody instead of in front or behind. You can hand things back and forth. You can have a discussion. And, you know, sometimes we call canoes and kayaks that are tandems, you know, double-ended divorce machines. So it just depends on the individual. But tandems are fine, especially if one person has more strength than the other or, you know, things like that. Kid, adult kid, you know, things like that. Those are great.
Thanks for calling. Adam and Madison, on to you now. Hi, Adam.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I am a 68-year-old person who recovered from a heart attack. I also have bad knees that my doctor tells me someday will have to be replaced. I do snowshoe. I do swim a third of a mile regularly. And I ride a touring bike where I've adjusted it so I'm sitting upright. The problem is getting down on my knees in the canoe or those very low seats. I had actually purchased from you years ago an old town aluminum canoe, which has basically been sitting behind our garage now for years because of the frustrations of trying to use it. Is there some kind of boat, a small boat that gives a canoeing-like experience that I can take to you know, smaller lakes and things like that, where you can end up sitting mostly upright and you know, using oars or using something so that you're basically working in a a sitting position. Mm-hmm. And you know, does a canoe place like yours sell something like that? And does it cost something less than $10,000?
Slightly. actually way less. Yeah. There are things like that. In fact, what has happened is, as kayak fishing becomes more popular, people want a little more stable boat and they want a boat with a little higher seat so they can see better. And what we found is it's kind of a backdoor way to get into boats that are a little bit more comfortable. And so there are boats that we can, that will fit for that. The other thing is we can modify pretty much anything. We do a lot of that because we have an adaptive paddling program where we put people with disabilities into boats. And it doesn't mean you have to have, you know, a severe disability, even if it's just something like your knees. We can make it work. And, I mean, bad knees are you're not the only one out there. I have a friend who's 46 and he just got a new knee. And he says it's great.
Yeah.
He loves it.
So you can adapt.
Yeah, and there's a couple boats that I'm thinking of. One is called, it's a Jackson Kayak Coosa, COOSA, and the seat is quite high. You're almost sitting like in a chair, and it's quite stable. It's designed originally for kayak fishing, but it's going to weigh less than your aluminum canoe for sure. Easier to get around, and the seat comes out, so it drops some weight there, and you can pop it in and out depending on how you want to use it.
Oh, great. Thanks for calling, Adam. Appreciate your call. We are talking.
Good luck on the knees.
Yeah, good luck on the knees. We're talking canoeing and kayaking today with Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our engineer today, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. When you phone in today with your paddling question, Erica Janik, our on-air producer, there to answer your question or answer your call, at least, with a big smile on her face and a happy voice. So, Erica, thank you for being with us today, too. As we visit with Darren Bush of Rutabaga Paddle Sports in Madison, and more callers online. So let's go back to the phones. Brian in Ellison Bay, it is your turn. Hi, Brian.
Hello. I just had a comment and a question. If, you know, back to paddling in cold, cold weather, if you want to be humbled a bit about what it's like to get dunked into cold water and know what to expect, I would recommend doing a polar bear plunge on New Year's Day, because you jump in that water and your IQ goes down awfully fast and you just want to get out.
And some of us can ill afford that, so yeah.
Right. But and then my question, we have a one-year-old and a four-year-old, and I've kind of decided that we're not going to be canoeing for a while, maybe for a year or two. I'm wondering if you've ever canoed with young children, and what works?
First of all, why? Why have you decided something so foolish?
Don't wait, in other words.
You know, I have a friend who was asked, when's the best time to get your kid into paddling? And he says, on the way home from the hospital. There's no reason not to paddle with them now. Now, the thing that I talk about is paddling experiences for kids should be 10 minutes per year of age. So if they're a year old, they can handle about 10 minutes. And that works really well, because you want to pull them off the water before they want to get off the water, right? So do reconsider that. Get them a good PFD and just little tiny trips. Get them used to it. But the trick is a couple things. Number one, in a canoe, you want to trim the boat to make sure that it sits flat. Otherwise, what it turns into is a weather vane. So if you're in the back and it's heavy and the kid's in the front and it's light, you're going to spin around depending on how the wind blows. What you can do is turn the canoe around the other way and sit in the front seat facing towards the back, and then put the kid in the back seat facing towards the back. And that usually makes a difference in how the boat trims. I've been doing that with my kids since they were,
since
they were a year old, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing is just for a kayak, it's weight distribution. If you need to throw a couple gallons of water up in the front of the boat to drop it down, go ahead and do that. But yeah, and then a leash for the paddle, because what one-year-olds like to do is have a paddle, but they also like to play fetch. So it's like, hey, daddy, get the paddle. Hey, daddy, get the paddle. So just tying a little piece of bungee on the paddle and then tie it to, you know, part of the boat. Don't tie it to them. So you can pull it back in easy and give it back to them.
Very good ideas. Thank you very much for calling, Brian. And we turn next to David in Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hi. I have a practicality question. I have a kayak. But I've also gotten into sailing, and most of my access is lake. I'm curious if there is a practical conversion thing that you hook on to a kayak to turn it into a little sailboat, or is it just better to get a little sailboat?
There are things, actually, and it's really interesting you should say that, because there's a couple different people that do things. One is called Balog Sail Designs, B-A-L-O-G-H. They're not inexpensive, but the thing is you can switch back and forth both ways. And they consist of a sail, a dagger board, or a lee board, and two pontoons that stick out to the side. And you really get a sensation of speed, because you're sitting really close to
the
water.
So low, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
like an ice boat.
It feels like, you know, except when you tip over one of these, you don't get a... Yeah. No, they're really fun. And you can switch back and forth between the kayak and the sailing part of it. The other one is...
Now, when you say not expensive, or that they are a little expensive, what are you talking about?
Between $1,000 and $2,000, depending on the setup.
Okay.
But they are a sailing rig. They will point up wind like a sailboat. They're not just a big thing.
Yeah.
You can get things you just hold up, and you can go downwind, and that's really fun, too. But if you want to actually sail the boat like a sailboat, you need to get something like that.
Okay.
Good question, yeah.
Thanks a lot, David, for calling. Appreciate it. And Greg in Watertown, your turn. Hi, Greg.
Good afternoon, or morning. Say, I wanted to talk a little bit about the bent shaft paddle and some of its advantages and uses. I think one of the things that the bent shaft paddle does is it allows the paddler to lift himself up out of the water and lift his canoe up, decreasing resistance in the beginning part of the stroke better. And if you think about the canoe paddle stroke in the beginning of the stroke in the entry, you're sort of lifting the canoe up, causing less displacement and less drag. And then in the middle, you're pushing the canoe more forward. And then toward the rear of the stroke or the end of the stroke, you're actually pulling the canoe down into the water and causing more resistance. So the bent shaft paddle takes advantage of that phenomenon. And a good racer will try to keep the stroke way out in front of him in the whole stroke cycle, so that he's doing much more lifting and pushing the canoe forward and very little pulling it down into the water. And then the bent shaft paddle also, being so nice and light, allows for a quicker cadence so that you can operate in that front part of the range more quickly and lessen your air time so that you get your boat to go through the water as efficiently as possible.
What do you think, Darren? I think it's sounds logical to me.
Yeah, good points. Most of the bent shaft, when you paddle with the bent shaft, it is a faster cadence, and the stroke usually ends right at your hip. You don't drag it long behind there. You want to get it out in front, like you said. And as far as pulling the boat up out of the water, I'm not sure that has that much difference, because you're looking at, 500 pounds of people in boat and not a very big motor. But definitely getting the stroke out in front of you and getting a better catch, a better bite at the front, and then taking the stroke out of your hip is, definitely the way to go with the bent, yeah.
Okay, thanks, Greg, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. If you got a question about canoes or kayaks or paddling, we'd love to hear from you. Josh in Westby, you're next. Hi, Josh.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Had a question. Because it's springtime, there's a lot of melt going on. I was wondering about legality of paddling up navigable waterways.
Legality of paddling navigable waterways. If it's navigable, you can paddle there. The Coast Guard does have some requirements for canoes and kayaks. They're much less stringent than powerboats. You don't need the red and green light, for example, on the fronts and the bow and stern of the boats. You don't need that kind of markers, but you do need a white light that's visible for, I think it's 2 miles. And it's not hard to do that. You can get a pretty good light to do that. So when we paddle at night, what I do is I put a little lamp on the back of my PFD that has a little lens on it that magnifies the light, and then I wear a headlamp in the front. So that works. That's both legal and safe. It's in Wisconsin because of the, what is that called again? The treaty? Northwest Treaty.
Oh, yeah.
All waters are navigable and free.
That's correct.
Forever.
There you go, Josh. Thanks. Mike in Millador, on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I have a really cute story first. Before my question about a 1.5-year-old in our canoe, my wife and I were canoeing on the Kickapoo, and he was up in front playing in the water, and all of a sudden he went over, and he had a life preserver on. Well, my wife got him by one ankle, and she couldn't pull him out of the water. His head was in the water, and I just said, "Let go. He floats. I'll catch him." And she let him go, and he bopped past me, and I picked him up with the little handle and set him in the canoe. He never knew what happened.
Right.
And last year he was a guide for the Boy Scouts up in the Boundary Waters, so it didn't deter him at all.
It's a good thing that happens early on. One trial learning. They learn not to lean over quite so far.
That's right. My question is, I'd like a gentleman earlier, I'm 48, I've got a very bad back, and I've had to adapt my gear so that I carry the weight on my hips instead of on my shoulders, and I found, and it seems to be discontinued, a canoe pack, and it was KNU pack, and it was a frame pack that you could carry your canoe on the top of. And I'm wondering if there's anything out there like that nowadays so that I can put the weight of the canoe down on my hips instead of on my shoulders.
I don't think anything like that exists. However, building that would be really, really easy. All you need is an external frame pack of some sort, and those are really easy to find because most packs are internal frame now. So garage sales, Craigslist, any place, you know, you can probably get an external frame pack for $5 to $10. And then all you need to do is put a couple of risers on each of the ends of the external frame and then a little V at the top to slide into the yoke of the canoe. Where are you located again?
Millidor, central Wisconsin.
Central Wisconsin, yeah. If you're down in Madison, just let me know you're coming. We'll throw something together. I got a metal shop in my garage. So
I'm down there every 3 weeks. I'll stop in.
Cool.
All right. Sounds great.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly, or email us at talk@WPR.org. Anything out there in the way of new products, things that you, I mean, you saw plenty at Canucopia, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of hard to narrow it down. A lot of new materials. People are using different materials. The thing that seems to be changing the fastest in kayaks is the seating arrangements. And we've had several people talk about the seat and the importance of the seat. That was kind of a left to the wayside for a long time in the evolution of kayaking. It's like, well, the hull's done. Let's throw something together for the seat. But people are aging. The baby mm-hmm. boomers are wanting a right. comfortable seat. I'm not young. Mm-hmm. Relatively speaking, I'm 49. Mm-hmm. I don't want an uncomfortable seat. I want a comfortable seat. And so people are looking into ergonomics and looking at seats differently rather than doing it the same way they've always done it. But other than that, just evolution, things get lighter, stiffer, better, drier, all that stuff.
So there's plenty going on.
There's always plenty going on.
What about the new materials? You talked about new materials. What kinds of new things are we seeing out there in materials?
There's basically, for a long time, it's been polyethylene, for the rotomolded, rotationally molded kayaks. What people are doing with that is experimenting with the alloys. Just like metal has alloys, plastic has alloys, and they found ways to make it lighter and stiffer so that you can get a lighter boat that has the same performance. And weight and the seat and the weight are the two most important things in choosing a boat.
Yeah. What is what's a typical weight for, let's say one of these new products, what is a kayak going to weigh for a one person kayak?
It depends. My guess is just squinting at it, for a short, 10 to 12 footer, you're looking at 40 to 50 pounds, something like
okay.
that.
Okay. Yeah. So that's something many of us can lift up and put on the car.
And
whatever.
You can get them down as 25, and there's ones that are 80, but they've got all sorts of doodads and gizmos that go into them. For kayak fishing especially, they tend to add
adds
a lot
weight.
Of stuff.
Yeah, that adds weight. Well, Dick in Viroqua has a question for you. Hi, Dick.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I do a fair amount of canoeing in the Boundary Waters, northern Minnesota, and I do some solo trips, and I've done very fine. But I'm a little more concerned about what if I get caught? Do you have any recommendations as to what kind of, cell phones just don't work, but I think there are some kind of phones that are available that you can get reception up there.
So you break a leg or something and you're sort of stranded, that's what you're saying?
Boy, that's a great question. There's a couple products out there several. One is a satellite phone. They're great, but if you fall and, are incapacitated and can't dial or you can't see because your vision's cloudy, that's a downside of it. There's a couple other things. One is called an EPIRB, which has been used in aviation for years. They're mounted in airplanes, and when they either push the button to send a mayday or there's some sort of gravitational overload because of the plane hits the ground, it'll set off the EPIRB and people will know where you are. They're private, small EPIRBs that are the size of a small walkie-talkie now. And all you do is push the button. You upload all the information to the computer of who you are, where you're from, who people should contact, do you have any medications or any conditions you need to deal with. And it sends a signal up to a satellite. And the satellite, and it sends a signal, and it sends your GPS coordinates to a satellite. That bounces back to an emergency center that will dispatch somebody to come and find you. The rule is imminent loss of life, limb, or eyesight. So you don't want to crack it because you have a cold. I don't feel mm-hmm. good. I want to get called out. And people do that sometimes. They'll get in the middle of a trip and say, I'm tired and I'm cold, and they'll crack open their EPIRB and they'll come and get them and they'll charge them for it. And it's not cheap.
No, EPIRB. Is it P-E-R-B?
It's E-P-I-R-B. And the company that makes most of them for recreational use, outdoor use, is called ACR Technologies. And a good website. You know, we have a couple of them here and there. They're not super common. They're not inexpensive. They're in the $300 to $500 range. But for a solo tripper, I, peace of mind. Well, I use one, and the reason I use it is because I want my wife to be comfortable while I'm gone. That's really the most important thing. One more thing they can do is they can send an I'm okay signal, so you can push a button, you know, in the morning and at night that sends a little text message or a voicemail or something like that to your designated contact saying, hey, everything's cool, no problem, don't worry about it.
Wow, that's worth some money.
I think if you just did that and didn't have the EPIRB, I think it'd still be worth it.
Yeah.
You know, people want peace of mind.
Yeah. So there you go, Dick. Thank you very much for calling.
And thanks for doing solo trips. You know, God love you. That's awesome.
Josh in Boscobel, your turn. Hi, Josh.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
I have a question. Last summer, my wife and I were in Alaska, and we saw these hikers that had inflatable kayaks. We were kind of interested in that, and we just kind of want to get an idea of what you think about that and the price range, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, sure. Inflatable kayaks are a really good idea for people who travel a lot, people who have space issues, people who don't want to put a boat on top of their car. So for that kind of thing, they're great. For as far as paddling and how they move through the water, they're not bad. They're not going to work as well as a hard shell boat. But if you've got that mobility issue, or you want to hike into some of the small pothole lakes up in the Sierras or something like that, I think they're great. And we have had customers buy them for that reason. Just to, you know, throw it on their back, hike up, you know, go out and fish in a lake that no one ever fishes in because they can't really get to it.
Okay. So there you, so you have to kind of think of how you're going to use it.
Yeah, and then price range, you don't want to spend more than about less than about $600 or $800, because under that price range, you tend to get more of a beach toy than a real boat, and you end up replacing it three times. It's less expensive to buy a decent boat for
to begin with.
Yeah,
all right,
totally.
John in Superior, hello.
Hey, I'm interested in a kayak for myself, basically. My wife and I used to canoe a lot, but she discovered kayaking and likes to be solo. So I'm interested in a kayak for myself that's stable. I can fish out of it, and I've been looking kind of maybe at the native watercraft because of the double hull, and so I'm not. And I was just wondering what you would recommend. I do weigh about 300 pounds, so that and I have a bad back, so I need something I can sit up in. As well, so okay. What would you suggest?
Well, it's interesting you mention that because the Native Watercraft Ultimates are that series is one of our best selling boats, and it's exactly for that reason. They're stable and the seating position is great. I would recommend there's a 14-foot 5-inch solo. They've got a 12-foot solo and a 14-5 solo. I would definitely recommend the 14-5. At 300 pounds, you don't want that flotation, but that'll work. The other boat I would look at is kind of a hybrid canoe kayak. It's called the Fusion. It's from Winona Canoe. It's a canoe, but you sit in the bottom of it and paddle it like a kayak, and they're really stable. And the thing is, they're really light. So if you've got back troubles, you can pick it up and haul it around like it's nothing.
There you go, John. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And John in Watertown, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, good afternoon. Calling to find out, I'm a duck hunter. We use kayaks, but you're using junior jet sleds, otter sleds, whatever, to hold our decoys in to very shallow water. I was wondering, does anybody make a shallow platform, recessed platform, where you could put a bag of duck decoys on to float behind with, like, a carabiner?
Interesting question. The answer is simple. I don't know. It's not something that I've looked at. That's going to be more of something you find in I'd say a traditional sporting goods type store. I mean, there's always things you can do, but I guess I would just say if you've got something that works, keep doing it. I don't really have an answer for that.
Okay. Sorry there, John. Thank you for calling. Michael in Washburn, on to you now. Hi.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Great.
You don't have any snow down there, I take it?
No.
We have plenty up here.
No.
Keep it.
I'm still thinking of paddling. While I've got the horse on the phone to ask out of the mouth, I'm getting ready to clean up two boats I have. One I bought from you. It's a fine Novacraft product, the Prospector, the new blue steel. Matter of fact, it was the first red blue steel they ever made. And an older boat, and that's about 5 or 6 years old, and an older boat, a Malachite, Mad River Malachite. And while I've got you there, I wanted to know, how do you go about putting gel coat on? What's the best way to go about that? And what product do you guys carry that I can get online from you to use for that?
Okay, I got to clarify. So you want to put gel coat on the Prospector and on the Malachite, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
The blue steel, we're talking about a material that is a Kevlar carbon hybrid, for those that don't know what blue steel is, other than the Zoolander reference. it doesn't have gel coat on the outside. It has just a skin coat. And so what I would do for there is just use a little bit of epoxy and, you know, cover the areas that are wearing. If it's wearing a lot, you might consider putting a skid plate on it. As far as the Malachite goes, I'm going to assume it's just a standard Kevlar, correct?
Standard Kevlar?
It's already gel coated on the outside.
I'm sorry, say again?
It's already gel coated, the Malachite?
Yes.
Okay. You can get something kind of sort of close to matching that gel coat, and we can get that from Mad River. If the boat's, how old's the Malachite?
91.
Okay. It's not going to match exactly, obviously.
That's not a factor.
Oh, good. I love people like you.
It's a boat, you know?
Okay. Okay, we're clear. Good. In that case, it doesn't matter. Yeah, you can catalyze gel coat, and it's a catalyzed product. You put it on the areas that are wearing, make sure they're prepped and sanded, right? And then you just sand it down with a sanding block till it's flush, polish it, and you're good to go.
Okay, and that was the product was called Paddle Life.
No, it's just a regular gel coat.
Oh, I see.
And you just want to catalyze it. I'm sorry. I'll enunciate better.
And then as far as the epoxy goes for the Novacraft, is that just a do you have a name for that?
You can use West Systems. That's what we use at the shop.
Okay.
And, you know, one thing you might consider doing is I use West Systems sometimes, and I mix in some carbon powder, and it makes it black and really cool looking and a little bit slippery. And if you got a blue steel boat, that'd be kind of cool looking.
Very cool. Okay.
All right.
Thanks much. Appreciate it.
Thanks much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Darren, thank you so much.
Oh, man,
the time flew by. And people can always go to your website, which is?
Rutabaga.com.
Rutabaga.com. And you'll be back and with us again, I hope, sometime.
Yeah, tell me when. Maybe after Hawaii. Huh?
Oh, that'd be fun. Okay. All right. Thanks. Cool. And good luck on that trip. Darren Bush, Chief Paddling Evangelist and owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports of Madison. It's great to have him here. And, maybe when he gets back from Hawaii, we will have him back. And he can talk about some of his experiences over there and, of course, answer your questions. Coming up, you know, there's a new book out. I finished reading it the other night. And I tell you what, I really enjoyed it. It's called Wicked Bugs: The Louse That Conquered Napoleon's Army and Other Diabolical Insects. And my guest is the author, Amy Stewart. She's in the studio with me, and she'll be back with us in just a second here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.